to Orphaned Entertainment, a podcast dedicated to public domain and abandoned media. I'm your host, Christopher, and with me is a woman who people tried to talk reason, but the allure of podcasting was just too great. It's Lydia.
I've wasted every penny in the last decade on this. No, it's not true.
Saw an ad in the paper and...
Yeah. Some guy named Christopher approached me at this thing and was like, "You're so talented, we can make you a star." And I got suckered right in.
Well, before we go any further, thanks everyone for tuning in to this month's episode. Orphan Entertainment is available wherever you get your podcasts and wherever you choose to listen. If you have the option to do so, please rate and review the show. That helps get the show in front of more eyes and hopefully in more ears. Another great way to help is just by sharing the episode you're listening to on whatever social media platform you use. You can follow the link in the show notes to all our social media sites, as well as our YouTube channel, where you can watch many of the films we have covered here on the show. And I just shared with Lydia our stats for this past year. We have gained over 2,000 new subscribers to our YouTube channel.
We are
We are 7,500 subscribers. I think that is just incredible.
That's wild. That's so amazing.
If you would like to email us with any comments, suggestions, or feedback on this or any episode, please type or record a message and send it to orphanedentertainment@gmail.com. Let's listen to an Ellery Queen one-minute mystery and a promo for another podcast. And when we return, we'll see how well we fit in on the Nut Farm.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with the case I call The Mysterious Ham. I received a call from a ham operator in the Midwest who thought he was onto something big, spy stuff. He picked up a voice transmitting near a big airbase, and the language was one he couldn't understand. "It isn't any language I ever heard in North America," he said, "and doesn't sound European or Oriental." "I think I'll have an answer for you once I get a listen," I said. And quickly I knew it was no spy. In a moment, I'll tell you who it was.
I'm Alan.
And I'm James.
And we're the hosts of your new favorite podcast, The Test of Time.
On our show, we talk about our favorite movies from the past, mostly from the 80s and 90s.
There's Forrest Gump, which I hate.
Weekend at Bernie's, which I hate.
And plenty of movies we both love, but still love to talk about, like Risky Business, Swingers, E.T., Big, and more.
We talk about the movies and debate if they still hold up today.
In other words, do they stand the test of time?
So check us out. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and all the usual podcast places.
Check out our website, testoftimepod.com, for a full list. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Test of Time Pod. It's Test of Time to subscribe.
I can't believe you said that.
It's the Test of Time. James and Alan have to say, do the movies you love still hold up today?
In the case of The Mysterious Ham, our ham operator friend didn't realize there are dozens of American Indian languages still spoken in America. And today, more than a dozen Indian ham radio operators. Heap big business. Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
This monogram picture was directed by Melville Brown and is based on the John Charles Bromwell Broadway play of the same name. The film stars Wallace Ford, who reprises his role from the Broadway production, Betty Alden, Oscar Apfel, and Bradley Page, as well as Florence Roberts. In the film, Bob Brent sells his East Coast grocery store, and he and his wife, Helen, decide to go and visit Helen's mother and brother living in Los Angeles, California. Once there, Bob has his sights on buying a nut farm with the $40,000 that he received for the sale of his store. Helen, on the other hand, is drawn to the idea of Hollywood stardom and auditions with a shady producer. Despite her brother Willie's warnings about the man, Helen and Bob invest their money in a desert-based melodrama, Scorching Passion. Even Willie is suckered in to be the director. When the film bombs at its premiere, the family looks to be broke and their dreams dashed, unless Willie can come up with a way to save the film and the day. Wallace Ford was born Samuel Grundy in England, and at a very young age he was placed in an orphanage and was soon after shipped to Canada as part of a program by the British Empire to populate the territories.
Oh, wow.
He was adopted by a family in Manitoba, but wasn't treated well. He became a serial runaway, never staying with any families he was placed with. At the age of 11, he ran away for the last time and joined a traveling vaudeville troupe called the Winnipeg Kiddies. At the age of 16, Samuel Grundy and another youth, Wallace Ford, I'll get back to this, decided to head to the United States via freight train. On the journey, Ford fell beneath the wheels and was killed. Samuel would adopt the stage name of Wallace Ford in honor of his friend.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. When I started reading that, I was thinking, oh, someone got some order wrong. Who's this
right.
person?
No, it sounds like it.
After a stint in the Army during World War I, he continued working as a vaudeville performer and eventually worked his way to performing on the stage in New York, including Broadway. He starred in the lead role in a Broadway hit, Abby's Irish Rose. His film debut was in a small feature film called Swellhead, filmed in 1930 but not released until 35. And it was in 1931 that he was cast in Joan Crawford's Possessed, and then in the lead in 32's Todd Browning's classic Freaks. From there he worked steadily, often as the wisecracking sidekick or newspaper man. Along with dozens of B-pictures, he also appeared in five films directed by John Ford, including The Lost Patrol in 34 and The Informer in 35. Wallace Ford appeared in over 160 films throughout his career and continued to appear on stage in numerous productions, even creating the role of George in the original of Mice and Men. He worked until his death in 1966, his last role being Old Pa in 1965's A Patch of Blue. Many of the other actors in the film had very prolific careers, appearing in hundreds of films between them, some of which we've covered here on the show, and even more films I've watched outside of the show. But unfortunately, there's not so much information about them outside of that. I was really hoping to have more about... I mean, we got a pretty decent-sized cast here, but... Yeah, I was kind of clicking around. I was checking, Wikipedia. I was checking TCM and all the usual places. And yeah, it's like, these were actors. These are the films they did. And that's about it.
I wonder, and I don't know whether this is the case or not, but it almost feels like maybe that's because this is an older cast. It seems like most of the people in this film are a bit older. And so would have been maybe... wouldn't have, at the time when we started gathering a lot of information about actors and actresses, wouldn't have been as prominent because we tend to kind of cling on to the people that are younger and, dazzling and, early in their career from that standpoint or from that point in time. And a lot of these actors, at the point that this movie was made, were in their maybe 40s and even older.
That's a very good point. I mean, Wallace Ford was the youngest among the cast, I think. And yeah, he's the one that I could find the most information on. So very much just what you were saying, because his career, continued much longer than a lot of these others did, from this point forward. Because yes, you have Helen or Betty Alden and Oscar Apfel as Helen and Bob. You had definitely older actors, probably 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
They do continue to work, after this. But yeah, they're not going to be as prolific as someone like Wallace Ford, who's in his 20s.
And if they're already fairly settled in life by that time, maybe people aren't writing down a whole bunch of information about him because they're not, generating gossip.
Yeah, Oscar Apfel was actually... he was actually doing some screenwriting and directing as well. So acting wasn't his only gig. And then he retired after 39. So he only worked a few more years, at least in front of the camera.
He was born in the 70s. That's the 1870s. Right. And so at this point, he's already in his 50s. Mm-hmm. And so that's not terribly surprising. It's good for him that he got the chance to retire.
I was hoping to find some more information about Bradley Page, who plays the Hamilton T. Holland character.
Yes,
here.
Yeah.
Because we've actually seen him before. I believe he was Three of a Kind, I believe he appeared in.
And he felt super familiar to me as well. So let's see. That wouldn't surprise. Yep. He was in Three of a Kind as well. So that helps because I was going, why do I know this guy? I've seen him for sure in something. He's got a very, a kind of unique maybe voice and appearance. He just kind of is I would call him a type.
I could see Bradley Page kind of being a, we can't afford William Powell, let's use Bradley Page. I could.
My husband would say the Wish version.
Yes.
I could see that. And I also can definitely see him as like the greasy boyfriend, the gold digging boyfriend, like the.
Or the mustache twirling villain.
Yeah, the scam artist, which is what he is in this. And I think he is like, if he's not the original, he's definitely one of that specific type.
Yeah, but unfortunately, like I said, again, it was just one of these matters where I could find some listings for him, and it just said, he's an actor, he worked from here to here, here's all the films he did, but as far as what he did outside of film, or how he got into film, sorry, I got nothing.
And I was like, oh, he was in Love Affair, not that Love Affair.
Nope.
So, but no, I think that he is... maybe one of the most fun people. In fact, I think he is the most fun person to watch in this movie, with the possible exception of Ma.
Ma's a little feisty. I liked her.
I liked her. So her and then the landlord, Mr. Sliskum, were both just such characters. I really enjoyed them.
Oh, they were a lot of fun, even just the few moments where you get to see them side by side, kind of doing their thing later in the film. It's like, it's hysterical watching the two.
Yes, yeah. It's so funny. They are meant to be older people. Like, obviously, that's the characters they're cast as. That's, you know, what they are as well. But they're the kind of older people that you kind of just have to laugh at. Like, in a good way, though. Like, Ma is amazing. Like, she's the kind of woman that you come in crying and she's like, sit down and eat your cookies and milk and tell me all about it. And then Mr. Sliskum is the guy. I have a little trouble in one of my ears, and I have never seen poor hearing portrayed so accurately. Because, and this is the real reason why, when he is listening, he is staring at the face of the person who's talking, trying so hard to read their lips. Mm-hmm. And this is a real thing that we do. Like, and even, you know, like before I even knew that I was having any of that trouble, I relied super heavily on watching people's mouths, and I never realized it. And you usually don't see that, especially in this era. The guy puts his hand up to his ear and goes, eh, what's that? And it's like, okay, he's obviously acting like he can't hear. This guy actually acts like he can't hear. And I love all of his mishearings. Oh, yeah, it turns the grass brown. Burns the grass out.
And 11, why didn't you folks let us know you were coming? I almost swooned when I heard you yelling.
I wasn't yelling. This old fossil here.
This is Mr. Sliskum, our landlord.
How do you do? Yes, it is.
This is my daughter, Helen.
You had her not in the middle of the day.
Where's Willie?
Yes, where is Willie? Where's the kid?
Why, Willie's asleep.
Asleep at 11 o'clock in the morning? What's the matter? Does he work at night?
No, but you see, Willie's...
Come on, Ma. Let's go wake him. Ma, you need to imagine.
Okay. First trip to California?
Yeah.
Mighty pretty country.
Sure is. I suppose you're a native son.
Yep. Too much of it. Burns up the grass.
Yep. Yes, every wrong comment he makes made me giggle. So I really appreciated that character.
What was the one I got a kick out of? It was just, oh, how many acres? 50. Sure is.
Yeah.
Sure is what? Nifty.
Yeah. And all of them. And there was a comment made and he thought it was about his daughter or something. And the whole thing. He's worth watching. I love it. Those two characters are a lot of fun. But Holland is kind of the glitter.
I just took a quick peek at the Spencer Charters, who played Sliskum that we were just talking about.
Yes.
Between 1920 and 1943, 23 years, made over 220 films.
Wow. Wow.
Often just small roles and stuff, but still, that's a lot of work.
Yep. That is so much work. It's impressive. And I think that's a good example of a studio actor, right? He's not a leading man. He's just the guy that they have that just fills any kind of background role.
What do you need me to do today?
Exactly. Exactly.
Just shows up at the front gate and, go to Studio 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need you for a crowd scene. We need you to be a bartender.
Yeah. I think just like digging through them, you mentioned that you thought that the guy that plays Holland could be like a poor man's William Powell. Mm-hmm. Looking at Stanley Blystone, actually, he's the one I thought you almost could make him that. He's got 555 credits.
Who are we talking about now?
He's just one of the henchmen. Stanley Blystone. 555 film credits.
Holy cow.
We talk about, wow, this person has over 100. This person has 200 credits. 555 is just mind-blowing. That's individual productions. That's not including when he's on 8 episodes of this and 10 episodes of that, right? So that's just mind-blowing. It's incredible. Actors don't, you can't live long enough to do that nowadays because production takes so long. But that's amazing to me.
I love the fact that the sidekicks in this film, like you were talking with the Stanley here, and then Hank Mann is the other one, I believe. They don't have a lot to do, but what they do is fantastic.
Yeah.
The best moment was they're kind of talking up Helen and everything, and they're doing the screen test, quote-unquote, and everything.
Congratulations, Mrs. Benton. A perfect fade-out to a lovely scene. I'm sure the film will justify my reactions. I'm seldom mistaken.
Then you'll take me?
Really? And how?
I hope you'll take me. And the two guys are sitting over there. We will.
Oh,
and how.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Incredible amounts of films worked on by this group of actors. I like thousands total, probably. And it's amazing. I think it's probably a testimony to how much of cinema history we've lost, that you can have somebody that's worked on 555 films and we just know his name and his face.
Or you don't know his name. You know, there.
Yeah.
I doubt there's a Stanley Blystone fan club somewhere. You know, if there is, I would definitely like to know.
Yeah. But. Yeah, like scrolling his credits, he played policeman, sheriff, station clerk. You know, it's just all these characters where, you know, maybe it was one scene on a Tuesday. We needed a guy in a hat, you know, and so they grabbed him because he was either standing there at the gate or he was sitting in the extras room waiting to be pulled out. And he's just got one of those faces that you kind of can pass over. And it's just fascinating. What an interesting time to have been working back in Hollywood.
Absolutely. And this film is a really great example of just, it is a film of studio character actors, with the exception of Wallace Ford, I guess. He is kind of the star, and everyone else is just, these are the hired hands that we have for the studio, on hand for the studio. I do wonder, there's some, in some instances, in films like this, I wonder, could have simply been anybody else. It's just, these are the ones that people pass by in the commissary or something.
Yeah. And it is. And there's a scene in this that totally speaks to that to me. And it's when his girlfriend calls Willie and says, hey, they need a couple of people down here. If you get down here right now, they're going to have something for you. And he says, okay, I'll be right down there. Right. And then there's a little bit extra gag that follows up with that. But hearing people that worked in the industry at that time talk, that's really how it was. Mm-hmm. It was like, you get your job. Oh, there's the scene in The Holiday where Eli Wallach is talking about how he got his first job. Is he happened to be there delivering a package and they needed a boy for the office. And he said, I can do it. And it really worked like that. And it's amazing. Like some of the ways some of these people found their careers is just amazing. And then the way some of these people just eked out a career by being side character goon number three, you know, and kept themselves going in Hollywood for decades, being those just guys that they pulled off the side of the lot. It's just, it's incredible. It would have been to be a fly on the wall. Mm-hmm. I think there are some really good series and movies coming out now about this time. And it's so much fun to watch those. I keep going back. I know I've mentioned it like a couple of times, the series Hollywood, that I don't remember who has produced it, but it's a little bit later than this, and it's supposed to do with Rock Hudson and people in that era. But it's also, I think, you know, fairly accurate. You could be working as a what do they call them? Gas pump jockeys, something like that. And you know, if you've got the face and somebody rolls through, it could be your one shot, you know, and maybe you get it, maybe you don't. But even now, you know, the likelihood of being discovered in Hollywood is so minuscule, infinitesimal, and even more so today with the incredible limitation of production that's going on. It's amazing to me that people are ever able to make it past that. It's basically like winning the lottery.
It was interesting that this film, and maybe it's because it was a Broadway play first, does sort of poke its finger and it acts a little meta about what goes on in Hollywood, or definitely in some of the Poverty Row studios.
Which yes.
I mean, it's that term is used in this film. You know, this Hamilton T. Holland, he owns some Poverty Row studio, you know, movie mm-hmm. studio. I'm like, wow, did he just say that? I didn't realize that term had actually come into use yet. But yeah. But the whole idea of you know, placing an ad and Holland's whole thing is it's a scam. You know, they get someone to invest a good amount of money. They mm-hmm. they start making the film. They of course take a big chunk of the salary and mm-hmm. go, "Oh, we're out of money. You know, movie's over. Sorry."
Yeah, it's the producers.
Or maybe they actually produce some piece of, you know, B movie trash or something like that.
Yep.
But it is all just a scam.
Yep.
Effectively, and it was interesting to see a movie about what goes on in the movies in 1935 here.
The sketchy side of it, yeah.
Yes.
It is essentially the producers. I kept thinking as I was watching this movie that it felt just slightly like familiar. And it's not an exact verbatim reproduction, of course, but it is very similar. It's these guys that are out to get investors and then walk away with the money. It's kind of funny. I'm glad you phrased it the way you did, because I kept thinking, how has this movie not been remade? Because it is, people love a heist movie, a scam movie, and that's what this is. And the end is a little bit different. It's not just a straight heist movie, but it is. It's kind of a heist, also a good guys win kind of twist. So it's a fun movie. If you're going to remake movies, if you got to go back and dig through the annals of film, these would be fun ones to remake. These would be ones that we're not familiar with. Like, why not dig some of these stories out, some of these movies, and adapt them for modern, you know, modern stories or modern times, or just straight up retell them as the historical stuff that they are. And instead of... Instead of some of the stuff we were talking about before we started recording.
Yeah, it does seem like Hollywood thinks that, you know, movies didn't exist before 1960 or 1970. Because even when they remake films, oh, you're remaking a film from 20 years ago?
Yes. Yeah, I 100% agree. We're talking about literally about orphaned films. These are films they could go back and straight up use the script. They could just take the script and make the movie, but instead they're choosing to pay out royalties for something that the vast majority of people alive still remember the original. And
right.
It doesn't make any sense. Dang it, Hollywood. Can you guys tell we're just like a couple of nerds just talking about movies here?
Just a little bit. It's been a long time that we've had a comedy, that we've reviewed a comedy that we actually found fun. I mean, definitely the impression, I don't want to put words in your mouth, the impression I'm getting from you is that you did enjoy this film.
You know what's funny is it started off, and I... having watched it a couple of times now, I think this was intentional. But Helen Brent, Betty Alden's character, Helen is so overly expressive to the point of pantomime that I thought, ooh, this is one of those movies. But then, like, everybody around her is so good and natural. And I, after having gotten through the movie and kind of understanding, that's kind of the point. She's a horrible actor. The character is a horrible actor. Now, whether the actress is or not, I don't know whether she was, because she's so good at being bad. I can't tell if it's intentional or not. I think it's intentional. Like, it's pretty clearly intentional. But was it intentional, like, they told her to ham it up? Or was it intentional, like, let's just find the worst actor we can find? And so I started off watching it and really kind of cringed and thought, oh, this isn't going to be great. And then I think pretty much when we got to Mr. Sliskum, I went, oh, this is a little different of a movie than I thought it was. And then from there, it becomes pretty fun. And this is pretty early in the movie. We're talking a matter of minutes, not a matter of percentage of the film.
Right.
So, yeah, it was, by the time that you get into it and kind of understand what this is all about, it is a lot of fun. But going into it blind, every once in a while, we walk into a movie and I go, oh, this is not going to be good. Or I'll think, oh, you know, knowing a little bit about it ahead of time, we'll think, oh, this is going to be so much fun, like The Gorilla. Yeah. And then go, oh, that could have been so much fun. But this one, I think was a pleasant surprise. They have enough moving parts going in it to make it interesting. And to me, the only parts that dragged were the ones focusing on Helen and Bob. And it was him trying to drag her into this idea of life that he thinks is ideal and perfect, to the point where I can't say what I really think. I don't want to offend somebody. But
come on over here. I want to show you some pictures. Oh, don't cry. Come on, sit down. I want to show you something. Hey, look here. Here are the pictures of the farm I found.
You wouldn't even look at my pictures.
Why, yes, I did. Why, I thought they were beautiful.
Honestly?
Of course. Here's a picture of the house. Isn't that a beauty?
Well, where are the other houses? The neighbors' houses?
Well, there aren't any near neighbors. We'll be all by ourselves. Won't that be great?
Yes, I suppose so.
And we'll be independent for life. The owner showed me his figures for last year, and he cleared over $5,000.
Oh, but that's nothing compared to what Mr. Holland said I could make. But I suppose that's all over now.
Ah, the girl. We have time to close the deal this afternoon. What do you say?
All right. Oh, but I thought...
Gee, honey. We're going to be awfully happy up there in the mountains. Away from everybody.
Away from everybody?
Yeah. And at night, when the stars are out, quiet so still, you can almost hear your heartbeat.
How far is it from Hollywood?
Oh. Long way.
Is it near a railroad?
No. But sometimes when the wind's in the right direction, you can hear the train whistle. Way off.
Oh.
Oh, gee, honey. You're gonna love this place. Quiet night. After the sun is down, you can hear the wild animals howling.
Wild animals?
Just the sort of place I've been dreaming of for years.
Oh, Bob, you've always let me do what I wanted to before.
Well, I'd do it now if I thought it was the right thing to do. Of course, I never had a great opinion of Willie, but I think he knows what he's talking about this time.
Bob, the studio's only 5 minutes from here.
Yeah, but the real estate office closes in a...
Oh, but it's right on our way, Bob. And it'll only take us a few minutes to see the test. Bob, if they find out that we're not going to do the picture, they'll destroy the test. Oh, And I wanted so to have you see it.
Oh, now, please, honey. Don't coax me.
No. I wouldn't have you do anything you don't want to do.
But it was so forced. And so... just so in your face. And so... much, you know, it felt like they were like, oh, no, do a little more. Like, you're trying to convince her. Come on, you're trying to convince her. And then she, meanwhile, is doing these caricatures of smiles. So, and everybody around them is so fun and interesting. And you've got Willie and Agatha, their interactions are so cute. And you've got Sliskum and Ma Barton, and they're great. And Holland and all his guys, and the girls that he brings in to fake being expensive actors. Oh, he got me an extra $100,000 on mine. You know?
I loved his stand-ins for, you know, the other famous actors.
Yeah.
Lookalikes, Greta. I guess. You know, you had a Mae
impersonators.
West. Impersonators. Very
yes.
Good. Thank you. Yeah, you had like a Mae West there. Oh, how are you? Yeah, Greta Garbo to try to convince them that he's legitimate.
Yes. Yeah, there. That was a lot of fun. I think that whole scene was pretty fun.
Some of the best comedy, I think, takes place in Hamilton's office, even like at the beginning with the desk.
Yeah. Yes, that may have been the moment where I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. When the guy walks in, I don't want to say too much, but the guy walks in and picks up the thing off the desk and says what he says and walks out, and the guy's that was, well, I guess even, at this point.
I love the two movers come in to take the desk.
Yeah.
And they start taking things off the desk, and
yes.
They take the blotter, which also happens to, I think it had his crossword or a puzzle or something.
Oh,
I think
did
it, was it? It had a crossword or something on it.
Okay.
And Hamilton's like, well, hey, I was working on that.
Yeah.
It's just those little funny, almost natural comedic moments.
Yes.
You know, they don't seem like forced for comedy.
And maybe that's, I mean, that partly, that for sure is what makes Helen stand out a bit as like kind of painfully bad acting,
mm-hmm.
which again, I think is intentional. I really believe that they wanted her to be an awful actor. But there's none of the slapstick painful comedy that we've seen in other movies. And honestly, I'm trying to think if there was any slapstick in this at all, and I don't think there was. There was some physical comedy, like moving the desk and stuff like that, but I don't think there was any
no
like
pratfalls.
Yeah. And so, but the comedy that was in it was, there was physical comedy without it being like silly, and it all worked. The whole, the scene where they're shooting the desert scene, and she's so awful. She's just so bad at everything. And I love their look-alike, Valentino. I love their Valentino look-alike. I love that they're so clearly aiming for this iconic Valentino, and he looks great, and the acting is just so bad.
Yeah.
So
okay,
much.
It's time for your speech.
Your speech. I've forgotten it. We're all set to go and you forget your speech. The better ones are coming. I've got to kill you, darling, you mug. All right, come on, once again. All right, you see him? The better ones are coming. I've got to kill you, darling, you mug.
I forgot it.
Yes. Yeah, and everything is just stacked up against him. So this, I think it was fun. There's, yeah, I can say I think it was fun 6 or 7 more times, and I'm going to try not to.
I was, like yourself, just pleasantly surprised, because yeah, there was moments where you're introduced to a character and you go, I'm not sure if I want to watch a whole film with these. Even when we first introduced the Willy, I thought, oh, Willy's going to be the one that's really over the top and I'm not going to like. And he actually, he isn't. I mean, he is a little over the top at times and everything, but it seems to sort of work for his character.
Yeah, I feel like maybe you've got Willy and Helen are siblings that are both kind of drama queens.
Yes, yeah. And he is definitely, Willy is definitely pampered by Mom.
Yeah, I think probably you could argue they both are.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought I was going to dislike him a lot. And then he ends up being kind of the, you know, the hero of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a case of, this is the star, so we have to make him the hero. It just, his character, it makes sense for him to be the one that understands what's going on.
Yes.
Because he's got a little bit of an inside track on things. And so he sees it. I'm a little confused as to why, you know, oh, this guy's a crook, this guy's a crook. Oh, we want you for the director. I'll do it.
Right.
What?
I think for me, up until that point, I never believed there was going to be a movie, right? I mean, it was Harold Hill coming in and saying, there's going to be a band. Yeah, sure there is. Yeah, no, right. Mm-hmm. But then they actually, so maybe that's part of it is maybe I can make excuses for him to say, well, okay, so I guess Holland maybe produced some movies. And maybe they weren't great, and then Willy is just suffering from hubris, thinking, oh, but, which he clearly is, by the way, thinking, oh, I can make a great film if I just get a shot, you know? We all think that. But, so I think maybe that's the reasonable excuse is he just suffers from hubris.
Yeah, no, maybe that's it exactly. Maybe he thought, okay, well, if I'm involved, if I get in here, I can actually make this happen.
Yes.
And not let them just scratch the whole thing off.
And he does, arguably,
yeah, actually,
in a way.
True.
He makes it happen. Mm.
I really did enjoy this film. And I probably liked it a lot more, certainly than when I first started watching it. I thought it was going to be, this is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I was like, this was actually a fun watch.
Yeah.
This is one of those films where you really wish... You wish you could go back and preserve things better. I'm thrilled that this film still exists in some form. However, while the picture's okay, the audio is a little rough.
Especially, no, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's not the worst audio we've ever encountered, but it is extremely rough.
Yeah.
I would say very rough.
There are moments where it's rougher than others. I don't know if it's just a matter of... This reel of the film was, it was in worse shape than the other. Because the static sound and everything gets really loud about midway through the film. And then it ebbs away again a little bit. And then it comes back a little bit later. And yeah, but it's not so bad that you can't understand what they're saying.
Mm.
But it is a little annoying.
Yeah, even I think from the first reel there is... Especially when Bob is talking, I struggled to understand what he said. So probably part of that is just the vibrato in his voice.
Yes.
Yeah. And part of that is probably just the age. Maybe when it was captured, it wasn't captured very well. So it'd be nice to see a version of this where the sound was cleaned up and you could understand it a little bit better. I don't think there's a whole lot of music in it, if any.
I can't think of any outside of the... the introduction, you know, there's a song at the beginning of the film, probably with the credits.
Yeah. And I think it would probably be something very easy to clean up. Like, there are people out there that are extremely talented at this kind of thing that would be able to do it. And like you said, the picture's not too bad. So if you could just clean up the sound a little bit, it would be, I think, very watchable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Should we just go ahead and jump into some ratings then?
Yeah. I think it feels like... We haven't talked for very long, but it's kind of one of those weird movies where it's like it's not bad enough to complain about, and it's not good enough to rave about. So it's a solid, fun romp, And it but it isn't mind-blowing. Right. And it also isn't horrible.
Yeah.
And so yeah, do you want to go ahead and jump into rating?
Yeah, I suppose so. And I think you kind of described it. It is, how to say, I don't want to say this and make it sound disparaging or anything like that. It's a fun film, like you said, but it's not the greatest comedy of 1935 or anything no. like that. But it's not a bad film. And if it weren't for the hiss throughout the entire film mm-hmm. and the audio, I think maybe it would sit even a little bit better. I'll easily give it a 3 and kind of want to push to like a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't give it that full 4 or anything just because it's not particularly special, mm-hmm. I guess.
But, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but a 3 and a 3.5 would be where I would fit in it again. And it's a film where I could see myself, I got an hour to kill. I don't know what else to watch. I could see myself watching this again, just having it on in the background or something.
Okay, yeah, sure. I think for me, this is a movie where if I saw that somebody was putting on The Nut Farm as a play, I would 100% want to go see it.
Yes.
I'd be really excited to see this as a play. And knowing it came from a play, that makes a lot of sense. I think some of what would be really appealing about a play would be the blocking and would be like to see how they did the sets. And then also just live performance is so much fun. I know, gosh, back in 2021, people were pushing really, really hard for support of live performances because there was a lot of fear that they were going to go away. And this is one of those, I think this is just one of those stories that lends itself really well to live performance. And this is also, this is a play you could do in an untraditional kind of setting, like where they do the plays where you have everybody sitting in a circle around the center of it.
Sure.
Because it's so simple. Like the set pieces that you need are almost nothing. A desk, a chair, a camera, mm-hmm. another chair. And then for the most part, like you just need the barest impression of like a living room or a house. And this would be such a fun play to see done in a non-traditional kind of format, but is live performance. So I agree with you. I think as a movie, I can give it a solid 3. It's a solid film. It's got its funny moments. I think that there's no member of the cast, knowing what I know about the movie, there's no member of the cast that I think was just wildly miscast. There are a couple of scenes that I think were over-directed, but by and large, it's really entertaining to watch and something easy and palpable. Palatable. Something palatable. But it was probably better as a play.
Yeah.
And so as much fun as it is, I think one of the best things to come out of it is just getting the chance to see how prolific some of the actors were and to get a little bit of an insight onto what film was like back in this era. What trying to get into film, what trying to be a part of the film industry would have looked like. And those are just delightful. Overall, the movie's a 3 for me, but there's spinoff potential.
the further adventures of Willie, yes.
Yeah. or you know, live production, or
do Bob and Helen, you know, go onto the Nut Farm, and does it turn into a? Is this the prequel to Green Acres?
yeah, I could see something like that. I think that could be a lot of fun, a pastoral sequel starring mm-hmm. Helen, Bob, and Ma Barton.
In case anyone's looking around, there is a 2024 film called The Nut Farm. It is not a remake. It shares.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, it shares a title, but not a plot. So, yeah, I would be very curious whether anyone has or is still putting this on as a play. I hadn't thought about that till you just said it, but I would absolutely love to see this perform live. This film feels very much like a stage play. your very limited sets. You have two main sets, really. You have the office and the living room.
And I think also probably the film, the actual filming scene of it, yeah.
Right. Okay, so maybe three main sets. You got office, studio, and living room are pretty mm-hmm. much all you need. And it does feel very stage play-like. Even the performers all feel like they're coming off the stage or they're on the stage.
Yes, yeah.
But they aren't acting to the back row. When I say that, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I know we've used that as a complaint in other films where
yes.
we feel the actors are trying to perform to the last row of the theater.
Yes.
That's not the case. This feels very much like you are in a very, like you were describing, an intimate, small theater, a theater mm-hmm. in the round sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And these are performing in that kind of venue. And it really works. And I would love to actually see this live. I think that would be a great deal. I would hope that they don't, if they do it live, I hope they don't take it too far with Helen's overacting.
Yeah.
You can do it where she's a bad actress. Or you could take it where we want the audience to laugh at what she's doing.
Right.
And I think that would be too far. So I'd be a little disappointed if that was the case. But yes, I would love to see this. And I'm kind of thinking I got to find some way to like encourage some local playhouses.
Yeah. Yeah, she reminds me of Alina Lamont is who I'm thinking of. Like where she could almost get away with it, but there's just something really wrong. In the miracle of internet searches, I found that it was performed in 1929 from October to November, 40 performances. And the only setting is listed as the living room of the Brent family home. Hmm. And so the original play didn't have scene changes, it looks like.
Wow.
So especially with that knowledge, you could definitely do this with a non-traditional setting, I think. I could see that being so much fun. I just think that could be so much fun.
I could see where you could tweak the story a little bit, where she would answer the ad and maybe,
they'd come to the
Hamilton
house.
T. Holland doesn't have an office.
Yes.
And say, well, I'll come to you and we'll do it in the living room and
yes.
we'll bring the cameras.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I could see this being a lot of fun. Done a couple of different ways. So anybody that's listening that's involved in play production, here's a suggestion for you. Also, anybody listening that's involved in film production, here's a suggestion for you.
Please send us tickets.
Yes, we would love to see it.
or better, just send us information about the tickets so we can buy our own.
There you go. Absolutely, 100%.
And continue to support the live performances.
Yes.
All right, well, then I guess that will do it for the Nut Farm. It is a fun watch. Go ahead and, grin and bear it and get through the hiss and watch the film. just do it at a time where you can turn up the volume a little bit so you can make sure you try to hear the dialogue. I may try to, if I have time, I may try to play with this video and see if I can't actually get rid of some of that hiss myself.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can, and its sound doesn't completely garble the dialogue, I'll re-upload it maybe upload it as well with a little caveat that I tried.
Yeah. We're not investing in we're not investing in the kind of equipment or the kind of platforms necessarily that would do an incredible job doing that automatically for us. But they exist out there, I'm sure.
What I could do would be very basic, but it is possible I might be able to remove some of the hiss to at least make it tolerable or more tolerable.
Yeah, and I think that there are people out there that could do it very easily,
mm-hmm.
and or that have the software to do it incredibly easily.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, so look for that. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, and if it happens, you'll know it.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Join our 7,500 subscribers.
Yeah.
It still blows me away.
Yeah, if you're not subscribed yet, like, you can watch the movies almost as soon as we know what they're going to be. You can get a hold of them way sooner than the release of the podcast, because we record these about a month ahead of time. So, I think you, Christopher, make an effort to have them up 2 or more weeks before we actually do the recording. So,
absolutely. We usually decide on what we're going to watch off mic when we're done recording one episode. And I will try to go and have that film up as quickly as possible after that.
Yeah, we don't usually decide ahead of time, but this month we did. So if you're interested in some Marx Brothers, there's your teaser drop. Yes. Come back for next month.
But if we have any listeners that are also subscribers to the YouTube channel, again, you know, thank you very much. And I love seeing, you know, which films get the views. And I'm always a little surprised on some of them. Inside the Lines has been doing very well. It's only been up for 2 months and it has over 2,000 views. I think that's incredible.
Wow. Well, you shared our stats with me from 2024 a little bit earlier this week, and we've had 500,000 views watching movies that are out of copyright, that aren't in production, that you'll have a hard time getting a hold of. And 500,000 views of those films, even if we didn't have people listening to the podcast, that is so validating. Just to know that we've been able to bring some movies to people's attention, that many views is amazing. And really encouraging, because sometimes it's easy to fall into the mentality of, oh, people just want the same rehashed series over and over. So to see that people are so interested in coming back and visiting these old films is just incredibly heartening and gratifying.
One of my favorite comments that I get on any of these films is when somebody watches the film and they feel the need to comment and go, I never knew about this, thank you so much for uploading. And I'm like, awesome. You know, I feel we have another one.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love that. So if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, do that. And if you guys are curious why we don't plan out 12 months of content in advance, because we really do, when you guys send us suggestions and recommendations, we really look at those and we consider those. So don't feel like you're just sending suggestions into the void. We found a lot of really enjoyable films from recommendations from listeners. So please share those with us. If you find something that we haven't covered that is out of copyright, we want to know about it.
Yeah. Or if you're not sure, send the suggestion anyway and give me a chance to kind of do a little research and see if I can find out myself. We've had a few that were like, I know about this film. I don't know if it's out of copyright. I'm like, let me dig around. You know, I'll look. Hotel for Women was a suggestion. It just happened to be on my screen as I'm scrolling down here, and it's been up for about a year, and it's got well over 3,000 views. I think that's fantastic.
It needs more. And Hotel for Women deserves more than 3,000 views. So if you haven't watched it, go watch it.
Compared with Kept Husbands from 1931, which I'm trying to remember what we thought about that one.
I feel like it was overall positive. I think we enjoyed it, but I need to go back and revisit it. We talk so much about, we should do a review episode. What were our top 5 or our top 10? What were our, you know, lowest 5 or lowest 10? We talk about it a lot, but we haven't actually gone back and done it. So there's an idea for you too. If we hear back from a bunch of listeners that you really want us to go back and revisit what we've watched and give you guys a top 5, especially if you're new to the show and you don't want to go back through all 10 years, 11 years at this point of content. You just want to hit the highlights or the lowlights. Let us know. We want to hear about that too.
But as far as the YouTube channel goes, Kept Husbands is an extremely popular film with over 40,000 views. Mm. So if we could get some of those folks over to watch Hotel for Women.
Yes, yes.
that would be awesome. I love the fact that something like Street Angel, a nearly 2-hour silent movie, has over 1,500 views.
Ah, oh, that's so fun.
I think that's brilliant.
And that was a killer movie. That was such a good movie.
Very good.
And it was silent. That, and gosh, the one that we reviewed in, what, January of this year, of 2024, I can't think of it off the... Wait, no, that was Street Angel.
Yes, it was. Before we keep repeating ourselves over and over, and although...
Just go down a whole different path.
Yeah, exactly. But that repeating will be of thanking our listeners and our YouTube subscribers. So
yes.
It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it might get a little boring on a podcast. So we will say goodbye for now for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please, if you have any comments or suggestions, orphanedentertainment@gmail.com, or follow the link in the show notes to all the social media sites. That's going to do it for this month. Lydia, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm so happy that we got a comedy that was actually enjoyable and fun.
Yes, and not a big eye roll.
Yes, exactly. So that's going to do it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.